This episode is brought to you by the official coffee of the Chromecast podcast, Fresh Roasted Coffee, who we've partnered with to make a special edition Chrome Unboxed anniversary blend. Here at Chrome Unboxed, we're not just nerdy about Chromebooks, we're also coffee snobs. And look, we wasted a lot of time hand roasting coffee before we found Fresh Roasted Coffee, and we haven't looked back since. This coffee is roasted fresh to order, immediately packaged, nitrogen flushed, and shipped directly to your door. And although we can't officially say that this Chrome Unboxed edition tastes any better than the normal anniversary blend, that is the word around town. But don't just take our word for it. Pick up a bag for yourself and let us know what you think. You can grab a bag over at chromeunboxed.com/coffee. Welcome to the Chromecast, the official podcast from Chrome Unboxed, where we unpack everything from hardware to software in the world of Chrome and Chrome OS so that you can be more informed on all the latest updates, changes, and devices. What's up, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Chromecast. My name is Joe Humphrey, and I am joined today in person by Robbie Payne.
Hey, what's up?
And virtually by Gabriel Brangers.
Hey, everybody.
So, as you can tell, well, Gabe's not here with us.
He is in spirit.
He's here in spirit.
In digital spirit.
Digital spirit. Yeah, Gabe had a COVID exposure, and so he's doing the right thing and kind of laying low, quarantining. And so he is over at his house, and we have him piped in via a Google Meet chat that we have ran
Studio
into our sound.
Studio D.
This is R. My house is Studio Q.
Yeah, my basement is, I guess, M. I don't even know. I don't even know where. I don't know where it lined up.
Just to clarify, Gabe did have contact with somebody who did test positive. Gabe tested negative today, but
yes.
According to, you know, the latest that we understand about this whole pandemic, you know, apparently tests don't matter until after a week.
Yeah.
So a negative test doesn't actually mean anything.
Yeah. It's like a negative test soon after exposure might show negative, but you need to get tested again after like 7 to 10 days, basically.
Yeah. And they tell you specifically, and it's on the paperwork they gave me, that even if you tested negative, if you have a confirmed contact, so it's like less than 6 feet for more than 15 minutes, you should, I mean, it's not like the health department's not coming to my house, but you should quarantine. So better safe than sorry. We have some people in our family that are immunocompromised, so we've told them not to drop by the house. And you know, Robbie and I both have kids, and I know Robbie's dad as well. And just to keep everyone safe, we've decided just to not have contact for a couple of weeks just to be safe. So
yeah, and I mean the awesome thing is, though, given the technology that we have, we were able to queue up a Google Meet real quick. Gabe can hop on and
rolling.
Still be here, you know, and that's you know, so the audio quality is not going to be the same of what you're maybe used to, but we're going to still be able to have a good conversation today. So,
and I am wearing pajama pants and slippers. Just FYI.
Hey, you gotta take the silver linings where you get them.
Yeah, and take advantage of quarantine. I mean, why not?
Yeah, man? There's parts of it, I'm not going to lie, there's parts of it that are pretty sweet.
Gabe's,
let's be honest.
Gabe's showing us his outfit right now. See, this is where the thing that we're talking about will be really fun. Like, if we ever have to do this with the video switcher that we might get.
Yeah, that's true.
You could actually feed in a video from another source, as you know, and you could do like a little.
So are we gonna talk about?
Let's. I'm sold on it. I'm sold on it.
Hey, what are you all using right now? The Slate?
No, we're using the Dell Latitude.
Oh, okay. The camera, and I did not mention this in my review. I saw someone else did. The camera on this Chromebook that I am using is garbage. I know the lighting and
well, you got the HP.
Yeah, it's bad. And this
I'm assuming my view to you probably isn't great either, is it?
It looks okay compared to mine. Granted, you're in a lighter room that's washed in light, but mine, to me, my camera looks like
it's pretty grainy.
Yeah. But anywho, we're talking about getting a video switcher. So basically, we will be able to use our studio cameras that we use for our YouTube videos, and we will be able to feed them into a switcher board like they do in broadcast television, and I will be able to produce on the fly a video of our podcast. And what we will do with that is we will probably put the long form version of that over on the website. So if anybody wants to go watch, just watch the podcast, you'll be able to do that there. But then the added benefit of this is we will be able to use some of those clips as some additional YouTube content. So as we're talking about something that's relevant, we'll be able to actually have a feed into the switcher of one of our computers. So either the Mac that we use for the actual audio recording, or we can use a Chromebook as a feed into the switcher. And that can be like a cutaway as we're like scrolling through websites and talking about things. So it'll just be a more dynamic podcast. It'll be a more engaging podcast, I think, for those that are interested in that. Obviously, we're going to keep putting out the regular audio podcast. That's not going anywhere. But this will be some additional content for those who want to see us talk. And, you know, maybe you just want to throw it on while you're doing something else and be able to peek over and see us doing, you know, what we do. And occasionally it's fun whenever we get to reference like something in the office or whatever.
Yeah.
Like Robbie's doing this right now, you know, like you'll be right. able to see that. And right. Obviously, I mean, I'm sure you guys have seen other podcasts that do this. Like it's super common. We just haven't, we have a tendency to move fast and make things happen. So we wanted to podcast. So we had used the gear that we did and we started podcasting. And we just kind of figured it out along the way, right? Like we didn't set out to podcast as like this whole big master plan of what we wanted a podcast to be. We were just like, hey, let's just start podcasting. We started podcasting again. And we were sitting over at Starbucks, remember? Sitting at Starbucks, and we were talking about what we wanted to do. And I was like, guys, we need to podcast. Like we need to make this a more common thing. We had tried it like way back in like 2015 or 16 or something. And we just started it back up. And we've been doing it every single week since then. We've only missed 1 week. And that was just because of Christmas, right? Or no, I think we did one earlier in the week that week.
Last year, we might have still missed a week.
One or two weeks, maybe, yeah, that we've missed. But other than that, we've been going strong. And now, as we've progressed, as we've kind of gotten comfortable with this format, now we're ready to try something different. And again, it's just kind of the whole figure it out mentality, make it happen. And we started doing some research and looking at some different things. I actually used to work for a company called Switcher Studio. That is actually an iOS-only app that you can use iPads and iPhones to do a multi-camera switching kind of setup and live streaming. We don't need the live streaming part of that. And for what they are offering, like they do an amazing job, but it's for people that already have iOS devices sitting around or who want to invest in that. We already have all of our cameras. Like all we have to buy is battery adapters and we're good to go.
Right.
So it's kind of like we're just going to use that. And so, yeah, I mean, last week we hinted at this and I think I'm comfortable enough with it now that I'm ready to say we're going to do this. So stay tuned. I don't know how
we're on the hook
soon.
Now.
I know. I mean, I got to do it now. I don't know how soon this will happen. Obviously we're getting into the holiday buying season and we're working on a couple different things.
There's some stuff that's got to be tied up in the next couple weeks. But
realistically,
this is a January 1 thing. This is a 2021 project, I bet.
You say that, but I've been thinking about it for like 6 weeks now, and I'm ready to just do it.
I mean, honestly, it's just a matter of coming in and wiring everything up and being ready to go. And then,
you know. And we talked about like we want to kind of build a little set kind of.
I think that's the part that makes me think like it's gonna take a little time you could come in on a Saturday and figure out the wiring bits
absolutely.
If we had the hardware, but
we need to go buy some
the
stuff.
Room looks okay for what we do in it right now, but for this, and honestly putting some effort into making this room good will help for b-roll and all that kind of stuff for YouTube too. Like this will give us another place to shoot, so
exactly,
you know, I like all of these things. I just know that all of these things take some time. So
built into
that, we also need to iron that big thing on the wall.
Yeah, we got some things we got to do. Yeah.
So many things.
Yeah, there's always something to do.
Robbie said we're not allowed to buy anything else until he gets his Golden Tee Go.
Golden Tee Go. $17.50 on eBay.
No. No. We have something else that we're going to buy.
That's more than a Mac Mini.
I was going to say, we have something else we're going to buy that we'll talk about here in a minute that I think is more pressing than that, Robert. I'm sorry.
Would we say more pressing?
I mean, you say that, but dude, I played. Okay, so we've I don't know that we've talked about this on the podcast, but Stadia has released a family share feature where
we haven't talked about that
on
here,
Stadia.
So let's talk about that for a second.
On Stadia, if you have a family share account, which Robbie and I do,
back up.
We're family. So,
yeah, you get six people total in your family.
And I have a family of four. Say it has to be your immediate family.
They don't care.
We're work family.
There you go. Close enough. And so, you know, me, my wife, and I've got my two kids on there as our like family unit. We had two others. And so I don't remember. This happened a few years back. I think it's when we were out in San Francisco.
We were in Las Vegas. We were riding in the crazy Lyft with the dude that had the disco ball and the lights. Remember
that's when we added the family group,
and that's when we started talking about T-Mobile and
no. It was in San Francisco,
dude. Before that,
we were in San Francisco for the Pixel event.
That's right.
Because if it was the same conversation about T-Mobile, it was about the phone.
Right.
It was about the Pixel 2. Yes. You wanted to get it, and
the Google stuff came before that, though.
Maybe.
Yeah.
See, I'm not sure when the exact time happened. I couldn't remember if those were the same event or...
So,
anyway.
Also, I'm on Robbie's...
cell phone plan.
T-Mobile plan.
Because you can add lines, and so it just made sense.
I mean, why
not?
You
were with Fi for a while, and you're like...
And I remember
you
draining
were getting
data,
and, yeah,
I was draining
like,
it. It was bad.
I can add you a line
like,
on my account
I was getting
for
to pay
20
like,
bucks.
I was paying like $120 a month.
Yeah. So we did that, and then at some point, I was like, well, you might as well jump on this family plan thing, so then you can have YouTube Premium and yada yada.
Yeah,
well,
and play music. Play music
was
included
music
in that.
Play music was like all the googly stuff was kind of there. It still technically is. It's all YouTube Premium comes with, because that includes YouTube Music.
I don't know.
And that was all that was in there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that did all
just
of those
two,
things.
Yeah.
So anyway, Stadia just announced the addition of their gaming libraries being shared over family. And I wasn't sure how that was going to work. Like at first I thought perhaps this would be a situation where like maybe your, what was I thinking it was going to be? Like your purchase stuff, maybe?
Yeah, the things that you had bought outside of Pro, maybe.
That's what I thought.
Like not your claimed games.
Right. I was like, the claimed games, there's no way they're going to let people share that. They do.
Yep. Anything that Robbie has claimed in his pro account,
and I've claimed
is in
every
my
pro
account.
Game. I've got them all.
I was like scrolled through. I was like, holy crap! I was like, does he play any
but
of these
you
games?
No way. Can't play together, correct?
Yes. So we can't play at the same time. So unless you both own the game, so one of two things. Joe could. So for PGA Tour 2K21, for instance, which is one title that I have played. I played that in Super Hot a bunch. He can play that game since I purchased it when it came out, but if he and he can do his own profile, like he's setting up his own thing, playing his own version
through
of the game.
My account.
It's just we can't both be using the game at the same time, which sucks because I want to get online and play against him.
But we could both bring our controllers over and play in the office, right? As multiplayer, we could pair two controllers and play that way. Multiplayer.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Maybe.
I know because like when you play locally right now on the one account I've done, you can just add guests. You can add three guests and play, but that doesn't...
And all use the same controller?
You can pass around a controller if you want, and that's fine, but the guest person doesn't have their own like...
Profile and everything.
Yeah, you're already not gaining XP.
I'm already all in. Like I bought the, I don't know how to say it, Malbon, Malbon. It's a golf company. They're kind of like a hipstery kind of golf company, and... You can buy all your attire. So, of course, I went all in on like the hipster outfit.
You need to go all in and buy the game so we can play.
That's what. And honestly, after playing it last night, dude, I have a $10 credit. I'm like, I'm probably just going to buy this. So that way we can play together.
It's fun. And I just, the Chromecast giveaways that happened for YouTube premium subscribers, cashed in on that. I didn't need it. So my neighbor across the street is a golf fanatic. And he's been wanting to get Stadia and back and forth on whether or not to get the new Chromecast or wait till you know Stadia works on that later or go and get a Stadia bundle. So I got this free one and I was so super excited when it came in.
Yeah.
I walked across the street and gave it to him. So he got it set up and he's been apparently his wife texted my wife last night and said it's a picture. He got a new 65-inch TV too. And so he's now playing on his 4K TV with his, and she just sent a picture of that to my wife and said, I guess this is what I'm going to be looking at for a while. Like,
it's super fun. It's hard. Dude, this dude's got a difficult game, but it's so fun.
Full size green, putting green in his basement. Like, he's a fanatic, but he just shot, under par twice in the last week. So he shot under par at Maywood and shot under par at,
oh, wow.
Yeah, Maywood's legit.
That's tough. It's a tough
There's
course.
Another course he shot at, and I'm like, dude, both of those to shoot par is amazing. Yeah. He shot like two under on both.
That's insane. So like, what is par at Maywood?
It's a 72 course.
Yeah, 72 course.
But still, I mean, it's not an easy course. No. It's relatively long and challenging. So, yeah, he loves golf, and so he is all over this 2K21. So I'm like, cool, we can get some three man things going, we can put some skins games.
You can create like local or not local, but you can create your own little tournaments and stuff.
Oh yeah.
And you can invite your players. Own courses. Yeah.
You can build courses.
Yeah, and you can invite players, you know, based on their name, their stadium names and stuff. Yeah.
So it'll be fun once that works in. Anyway, all of that to say, I don't know how we got off on.
I was saying, my point was, well, the family share stuff is there and it's working. So any game that Robbie has bought or claimed through his pro account is now available for me to play. I tried Stadia, but I'm just not a huge gamer. So I let my trial of pro expire and I don't have pro anymore. So I just have a Stadia account, the base Stadia.
Just the free stuff.
And now with Robbie adding all of those, I have every game that he has claimed or bought. But what led to even PGA 2K was you said we needed to buy Go, and I was saying,
that's right,
let's just play PGA.
No, it's nowhere near as fun as, as Golden Tee.
I know.
Do not fool yourself.
No, it's not.
It is not as fun as spinning that ball.
No, it's fantastic.
Golden Tee is its own thing.
It is.
It's brilliant. 2K21 is fun, but
it's difficult.
It's not arcadey enough for me.
No, it's like realistic golf.
Yeah,
it's, video game.
It went too far away from Tiger Woods, unfortunately. And even if you turn off, like, you can turn the difficulty stuff down to where it does feel a little more like playing Tiger Woods. Like the whole, like, you know, remember pushing the button real fast to charge up to get a bonus, you know, distance, and then being able to tap and spin for backspin after
you need
you get
to
the
add
shot.
Some little
Those
fun
are
stuff
arcade
like that.
Things.
Like
you should just be able to play in arcade mode.
Yeah.
And add a couple of that stuff. And yeah, and let me just play and build my character up. So that's the other thing. You don't build your character up in 2K21 either.
You build
experience. You can get better golf clubs.
Right.
But it's that game is so realistic. They just are like, no, you'll just get better at playing the game, you know, like you would playing a real sport. It's not about like building up your character. And I'm like,
I want to be able to hit, you know, 400 yard drives.
I want an average of 380 yards down the fairway each time. I don't know why that's so much to ask for.
Why is that too much?
Maybe if I get enough XP, I can get like a rocket launcher driver.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There
that's realistic.
Go. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. You know,
Callaway X-Hot.
Exactly.
Illegal. Can't play in the pro.
Nope. Not allowed. Okay.
Anyway.
let's switch subjects. MediaTek. Is that the first one we were going to... I didn't bring my
notepad in here. Yeah, because we can work this in with the other Apple thing.
MediaTek had their event. We talked about this last week?
Yeah, because Gabe's video went out last week at the same time as a podcast.
That's right.
About the box that they sent the giveaway.
Yes, they sent us a box, and they included a Lenovo Chromebook Duet in there for us to give away. So we're giving that away. There's a week left on that as of today, so it's ending on November 20th. If you haven't entered to win, you need to go do that. Brand new Lenovo Chromebook Duet. You need to just go enter to win.
It will be linked in the show notes.
Awesome. It's one of our favorite Chromebooks of 2020, so you just need to go enter to win that. It's a no-brainer. They sent us that box. It was cool, but that was kind of like a save the date, like kind of goodie box.
It was cool of them.
Yeah, it was like a little goodie box to get us excited about the event.
I mean, Qualcomm hasn't sent us anything.
No, they have not. So. No, they have not.
Wow.
I mean, I'm just saying.
Just
true.
Saying.
It's true.
Just
maybe
saying.
Apple will send us something.
Yeah, maybe a Mac Mini.
Crickets.
Hey, let's just start writing. Hey,
Apple doesn't even send their fan stuff.
I know, right? I think Marquez gets stuff in advance. No. Not even him.
No, he had one of his latest videos about the iPhones and stuff. He talked about the event and was like,
"I had to go.
I'm waiting on mine." And I think the FedEx truck screwed up. No, that was this Pixel 5. Anyway, he doesn't get them early either.
Wow. Like,
nobody gets the stuff early, and it's nice to be straight across the board like
that. No, for real. Yeah, I mean, it is. Yeah, I think getting people review units for certain things is cool, but yeah. Anywho, MediaTek had their event, their summit, as they called it, on the 10th, right? No.
Yes.
Yes.
10th. Yeah.
Wow. It was,
it was only a few days. It was a few days ago.
This week has been so weird. We literally sat down and we were talking. We were like, yeah, let's talk about the MediaTek event. And I was like, that was this week?
Yeah.
It's just been one of those weeks. Yeah. This COVID-19 thing is not done.
Yeah, and for me, like, this has just been a long week because there's been some stuff in the family. My wife's had some stuff we've had to deal with.
And yeah, it's just been a weird week.
So it's been a long week.
Yeah, but here we are. We're chugging along. MediaTek had their event. It happened.
It did happen.
We covered it, and they officially announced some chips that we've been thinking were coming and were, you know, assuming they were going to be announced, but they're here.
Yeah, like on the podcast even, just last week, we were talking about them. We're like, okay, 8192 is what's in Asurata and Hayato. We know this thing has been in development. I mean, Gabe found the original MediaTek 8192 commit. It wasn't a CES find, but it was not far after.
No.
I remember right.
Yeah, I was going to say 9 months ago, so probably somewhere around that.
Yeah, so it's been a while. We've been tracking Asurata. Hayato just showed up like a month ago. That one's pretty new, and there are no other boards. Hayato. There are no other boards coming from Asurata yet, but if the way MediaTek devices have worked before, like because Kukui, which is what bred the Lenovo Chromebook Duet, that device... It was actually, remember Flapjack? Everybody remember Flapjack?
Yeah. Remember, so I was super stoked about Flapjack.
Yeah. Flapjack was the original. It got, everybody thought, and I still think this is true too, like that was going to be a Google-made low-end Chromebook tablet.
And then they were like, we're not going to make these tablets anymore.
So we quit. And then it took them a little bit to get everything transitioned. Like Kukui was actually a sub-board of Flapjack, and they ended up flipping it, like make Kukui the main board. And then everything started spawning from it. So there was a little bit of chaos at the beginning of that. But it wasn't quick. It wasn't like Kukui showed up and then they started spawning boards. It was after they got worked out for a while. And then over the last, you know, we're talking back last year, in the last quarter of 2019 is when we started seeing more of these boards show up. We're still yet to see a bunch of Kukui devices. I mean, we only have a few. There's a couple that have shown up recently. And I'd say there's at least six or seven more boards that we don't know anything about yet. So they'll likely be the education or, you know, $200-$250 clamshell.
Yeah.
There's one more of them we're tracking to be a tablet. So it'll be interesting to see when it comes out. But that it makes more sense now that we see MediaTek's roadmap. So at their summit, they spent all of like 7 minutes on Chrome chip. But they
made a graph.
Yes.
Thank you.
They had a graph.
I was able to use the graph in the video, although it was a little skewed. I couldn't fix that. But hey, I did figure it out in Lightroom today. I was messing around with Lightroom again today. You can actually skew things in Lightroom and make them square again.
Like in three dimensions, basically. That's what helps. Like trying to get your brain to figure out how to
I needed to distort the left to bring the right. it doesn't make sense in my head.
Yeah, I can't do that. I'm not an artiste.
Gabe's like, yes.
The whole skewing thing. Oh my gosh.
Because you got to think of how to make a two-dimensional object move.
Three-dimensional.
Quasi-three
dimensions. I've even watched the tutorials on Gravit of how to skew stuff on
there. One tutorial that does it shows you how to do it like 45 degrees. Like, here's how to take this thing and lean it and turn it 45. Yeah. And it gives you the very specific, it's like to the decimals.
But it still messes
up.
I'm like, but even if you get that right, that's not telling me how to go about doing this for myself. Telling me how to do one orientation.
I did find that one tutorial about in Gravit about how to make three-dimensional angled text like that. Because I was trying to add it like down the side of a Chromebook or something. We were doing a featured image. You set up the project as isometric, which basically is the three-dimensional plane where you can then move things at 45-degree angles.
Okay. I didn't realize you could do an isometric.
What I did. Yeah. And yeah, it was, I've done it a couple times and like got a decent result on accident, but I had no idea what happened.
That's kind of what happened with me. I don't even remember what project that was, but yeah. Anywho.
It's a pain in the butt. But so back to MediaTek. So they, we're all over the place. It's that kind of week. So they put their roadmap all on this one graphic that Joe said that was skewed. And now that we kind of see it, it's like, okay, this makes sense. So MT8192 is in the middle. It is the middle chip. Last week when we were talking about the MT8195 that they announced a month and a half, 2 months ago, whenever it was, they had that random, it was Gizmo China covered it.
That secret meeting they had.
It was like some sort of, I don't even know what that was, but it was a thing. It got out a little bit, like us and a couple people covered it and thought it was something, but Acer was there and they basically said, hey, we've got 8195, 6-nanometer ARM chip aimed for Chromebooks. It's going to help make better, more affordable Chromebooks. But they didn't say anything about it. So we're like, is it going to be powerful? Or is it going to be mid-range? We don't know. Don't know what it's going to be. So now they have this roadmap laid out. The 8192, we've been tracking. 8195, we've known nothing about until now. And then the 8183, that is in the Lenovo Duet.
Right.
They're not getting, it's not like these two are going to supplant the 8183 and they're just done with it. Like, they know good and well, probably for the next 6 months, I bet, that 8183 is still going to be coming out in devices. It's still going to be relevant. They're going to support it, obviously, because like the Duet has, is it update to 2026, I think, is its update?
Yeah.
So I mean, June of 2026. You still got 6 years to mess with that thing. So, you know, it's going to be part of MediaTek's roadmap. That's the low end, affordable. The medium one is 8192, and then the 8195 is on the top end. The cool part is we found out, I think that was the MacBook.
It was.
It wasn't me.
It was not the Chromebook. But what we figured out was, from what they had to say, is kind of an idea of how powerful the chips are going to be. So we also didn't know about the 8192. Like, we've been tracking it for months, but
right.
There's no, we don't know what it's going to be. Like, we have no idea. Now we at least know the GPU that's built in. We know the ARM Cortex cores that are going to be part of it. So the 8192 is coming with the A76, Cortex A76, and then the 8195, the top end, is Cortex A78. And to put that in perspective, that's super exciting because
the 78.
78
hasn't even really come out yet.
Yeah, it was announced.
There's no chips with that Cortex yet.
The newest Samsung Exynos chip is going to come out with the 78, so it's not out yet, but their latest big chip is going to be that. And then the Snapdragon, which when we talk about ARM chips, the ARM chips that most people would be, like if you're going to find somebody that knows anything about an ARM chip, they're going to know the name Snapdragon from Qualcomm, and they're going to know about Apple's silicon. Whatever the chip is called, you know, they're going to at least know, hey, this, they might know, I'm not going to say they will know, they might know that, hey, my phone has the A14 or whatever. So Apple is obviously in the front lines of the best ARM chips you can buy. Qualcomm is fighting to stay in that space too. I think Apple still has a lead on them, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. But MediaTek's coming up. Yeah. Like, MediaTek is doing some cool stuff. And the way it breaks down basically is you have ARM cores, and we talked about this in the video that we put out this week, but their ARM each year comes out with their latest and greatest cores. They also produce a GPU, the Mali GPU, or Mali, I don't know how you pronounce it, but
I think it would be Mali.
Mali, Mali. Yeah. But they produce that GPU as well, where companies like Qualcomm and Apple supersede other chip makers is they go produce their own GPU. And I don't know if it's based on what ARM does or if it's just their own thing. I'm not really sure. But if you do some side-by-side comparisons of the latest GPU that ARM gives, basically, or gives out for their to go along with the new Cortex chips, and then you look at the Adreno GPU, for instance, that's in a Snapdragon, the Adreno just smashes the Mali or Mali GPUs. And so that's part of it. And the other part is, you know, ultimately ARM is just providing you an architecture. They're providing you like the building blocks to make these chips. And then these companies that have the resources, that have the skill, that have the manufacturing ability, can go and build better chips. And so, I mean, Qualcomm's, how big are they? I mean, they're billions of dollars. Right? I mean, massive company. Granted, they're in, you know, 5G and their Wi-Fi and modems, and they do all kinds of stuff. But building chipsets is a big part of their business. I mean, they're for a long time there, they were the only name in Android phones. That was it. But you've got some other companies coming up, and MediaTek is one of them. So we have to take all of this with a grain of salt, knowing that 876 cores are what are in the Snapdragon 855. That is not me saying the MediaTek MT8192 with A76 Cortex will be as fast as 855. It will not be. Partially because the GPU will not be as good. It's the, right. I can't remember the, do you remember the name?
It's the Mali 50. 57 or 56, I think. So it's an older generation GPU. So,
yeah. And so it's when I did some looking, and it definitely takes a backseat to the GPU that is on board with the 855. So, you know, there's part of this you have to look at and be like, yeah, CPU computing is one thing. GPU is a lot of it, especially when you're talking about running games and stuff like that. However, with the terrible GPU and Cortex A73 cores that are in the Lenovo Duet right now, compare those with what we're going to be getting in this new MediaTek chip, and it's not even close. It's, I mean, we're talking 3 to 4 times more processing power, more GPU power. So if we're comparing apples to apples, which is a MediaTek Chromebook to a MediaTek Chromebook, the 8192 is going to be a massive, massive leap forward. It'll be the biggest step forward we've seen with Chromebooks and ARM chips. And that's super exciting. I think it's going to be on par or a little better than what we're going to see in the Snapdragon 7C. And clearly, we have not seen what that thing's going to be capable of in a Chromebook either. The little hands-on time we've had with this, the Spin 513 from Acer, is not indicative of what that chip's going to do. I think it's both of them are going to be very, very good on Chromebooks. And, you know, that's super exciting because we're already tracking those. They're saying early 2021.
They're coming.
Early in 2021 is when we should see those. Probably around the same time we're starting to see Snapdragon.
The 95 they said would be like third quarter next year?
They didn't say.
Oh, okay. I thought Gabe had said
am I saying
like
that right, Gabe?
Quarter?
Like they just said in the future, right? They never actually said.
The verbiage was something like following the release of the 8192. So,
which to me sounds like
good as ours.
Yeah, next fall.
What MediaTek needs to do is get a hold of the M1 chip and reverse engineer it.
Some corporate GPU espionage
that they have.
Yeah, because yeah. Granted, the 8195 is going to be, it's going to be beast. And they're listing it as premium. But my guess is, in general, MediaTek chips allow for pretty affordable Chromebook manufacturing. And there's a lot of reasons why. I saw somebody had asked, you know, why are people getting excited? If we have Intel Chromebooks, why are we getting excited about these lower powered ARM chips? And it's for a lot of reasons. Like Android,
it's the same reason we're getting excited about a new Mac Mini.
Yeah, I mean, Android compatibility is exciting. And if you don't ever use Android apps, I mean, get it. That's not that exciting. But there's some cool Android apps that, you know, may or may not be better on ARM chips. I mean, they're just going to be better. And if you're looking for a small tablet or something that's an ultra-portable type thing, for people like me, I'd like to be able to fire up PUBG and enjoy playing on it. I can play on the Lenovo Chromebook Duet. It struggles
just
a little bit.
It's just not great.
But the settings it allows are better than just about any other Chromebook. So I'm like, man, you get some horsepower into this thing, and now we're going to be talking. But the 8195 should give us more performance for less money because it affects so many things. Like, you don't need as much battery.
I was going to say, battery drain, power drain.
You don't need fans. You don't need all these extra things you have to have with Intel chips. Is this going to be a Core i7 to 11th gen Core i7 power? No, it's not going to be as strong as that. But it's also not going to be so far behind that it feels gimped either. You know, it's going to be a strong performer. And I think the prices are going to be interesting, and it makes for so much easier manufacturing processes. Like, they can get creative with ARM powered chips where they can't with Intel chips, like, because the motherboards have to be a certain size and it's going to need this much battery. Like, yeah, we can't, it's hard to build a tablet out of that. Look at the Slate. That's what happened with the Slate. You try to cram Intel chips into a tablet and it's just a little bit too heavy and it's a little bit too big and it's a little bit too clunky. And then you pick up the Duet and go, oh, this is nice. Yeah, because the motherboard in it's the size of a Snickers bar. You know, everything's on that. It's
Who posted that photo?
A small Snickers. That was the Pixelbook.
Oh.
That was even, like the one in the Duet, I guarantee it's even smaller. Most of the Duet is battery inside that thing. And it gets great battery life. You know, and so the ability to have that kind of stuff and ARM chips, like we can go on a whole diatribe about ARM chips too with the ability to customize things. Like that's why MediaTek is going to be ahead of Qualcomm for a little bit in the space. They've been dealing with the customizations to make their chips work better with Chrome OS and optimize them for Chrome OS and make sure that, you know, as they run into the kinks down the road, they fix those things. And ARM gives you the ability to do that with on a particular device level basis. They can just go, oh, you need that thing to do this thing? Cool, write it and make that thing happen. Versus Intel says, here's what I do.
Figure out
match up what works to us. And it's why Apple's getting away from Intel. It's why I firmly believe over time Google will too. Like I think unless Intel figures out a way to be a lot more flexible, it's just going to slowly but surely get eaten away with ARM chips because ARM is closing the performance gap and Intel can't match the battery life claims. Intel can't match the performance per watt that ARM chips can. I mean, they just don't need much battery life, you know, like it doesn't require that much. And so that just gives you so much more flexibility as a hardware maker and then throw in the fact that they're more customizable. And it's like as a hardware maker, when I'm looking at building a cool new device, do I want to do something that I'm like able to just customize and flex on, or do I want to do something that here's my set of rules and I got to build my device around that processor?
So let me ask you this. As far as, well, I was going to say, and they're cheaper, which I think they kind of are. But
oh, no, they are.
Yeah, they are.
But even the top level, even like Qualcomm's latest, greatest Snapdragon is going to be way cheaper than a high-end Core i7 chip.
But like where my brain's going here, and I'm just kind of talking this out as I'm thinking here, Intel says, hey, here's our chip. You need to take this and you can use it. And we're going to charge you this much, right? ARM, I'm sure, has licensing things that they do where manufacturers purchase licensing of ARM architecture. Is that how it works?
That's chip makers do that.
Okay, so the chip makers do that, right? So then in the future, could we get to a point where ARM chips are getting so awesome that they end up creeping up in price? My point was they're cheaper because ARM what's the word I'm looking for? Like spread out. It's horizontal. It's not as
competition.
Yeah, it's not as vertical as Intel, right?
Yeah, and it's
so
it's,
even it, if we do get better and better chips, ARM chips over time, there's going to be multiple people making better and better ARM chips over time. So the price is going to hopefully still stay lower.
Like you can't just go buy an ARM processor. Like that's not what ARM does. ARM doesn't build. I don't know that. Do they even build reference processors?
Yeah, I don't.
It's not building. Like they figure out how to make the cores that make the processors, and so that's the difference here. And because right now, we've talked about this. Name x86 processor builders, AMD, Intel, and that one in China that Gabe always likes to reference.
And I don't even think they make them anymore. But yeah, and it's like you can't go to Best Buy and buy a Snapdragon in the box processor either. That's just not the way it is. They take the ARM architecture from ARM. They customize it the way that they want it for their chip, for the device that it's going into, whether it's Samsung making it for their own device or Qualcomm making it for Huawei or whoever they're making it for. So I can go to Best Buy and I can buy an i9 chip, but then that i9 chip's only going to do whatever Intel has hard-coded it to do.
Right, and then you build the system around what that chip's capability is. And so that's why ARM has such an advantage here in multiple facets. And it always has. It just hasn't had ARM-based chips have just not had the performance to meet what people need from a desktop computing scenario. That is changing.
Yeah.
Clearly, in multiple facets. And my last thing that I'll talk about here with from the MediaTek/Chromebook perspective of this whole thing is their Axiom, I think, did a story back in the spring about Google working on their own silicon. We have Sundar making a claim on investor call last week or so about these long-term hardware investments that could be interpreted to be all kinds of things. But he said some of those things are going to come to fruition early 2021 and over the next couple of years. So we've already got people saying like, hey, that very well could mean Google's own chipsets coming. And the reason that that is such a big deal, not if, but when it happens, like Google needs to get in this space for a multitude of reasons. It's not that Google doesn't make any of their own silicon. They make their Titan chip. They make the neural core that was in the couple. Was it in Pixel 2? I know it was in Pixel 4 and 3. I can't remember if it was in 2 or not. So, you know, those are small chipsets, but it still shows that they've got people working. And those pieces of silicon are ARM-based things, you know, that like all of the technology, like ARM doesn't have to just build CPUs. Like there are other branches to this whole thing. But ultimately, you know, when Google does move forward, because they've said, they did say in that Axiom report, it was clear, like they're building chips for Pixel phones and Chromebooks, their own Chromebooks. Whether or not they will share that silicon with other manufacturers, unclear. There's a chance that they won't. I don't know. Because ARM is as flexible as it is, it's both a competitive resource and a weapon. Qualcomm has figured out how to weaponize this. So they know, we figured out how to make it better. We can charge a little bit more for it. And then phone manufacturers aren't going to have the capability to do it. It's odd to me that Samsung hasn't figured out how to best Qualcomm. Honestly, it's Samsung's issue, though, is connectivity. Like, they just haven't cracked that whole 4G. Like, they never, like, when LTE hit, Samsung's Exynos processors started wobbling all over the place. Like, they couldn't figure out how to keep the connectivity part. And that's where Qualcomm kind of created their empire, because they met in the middle of two converging industries. They met in the middle of the wireless industry / smartphone industry. And everybody was like, we don't want to figure this out. Qualcomm builds this chip that's got both things.
We're just put it in my phone. That.
Yes. And that's what happened. That's why they converged and they kind of won the space. In the same way, Apple has kind of done the same thing with iPhones and iPads and stuff. They've got enough people. They've got enough money and resources to build these things for their phones, for their hardware, for their software that line up and make really impressive pieces of hardware. Google could do the same thing because the openness of ARM means anybody can jump in and do it. There's going to be differing levels of expertise, and a company like Rockchip, they make ARM processors. It's the same Cortex A whatever cores, but they ain't the same processors. And we all know that if you've used a Chromebook Tab 10 from Acer, you know. That's not the same level of processing we've been talking about here, but it's still an ARM chip.
Sure.
And they're not the only ones. Like Huawei makes chips. Apparently Huawei makes really good chips. And, you know, obviously MediaTek makes chips. And there's a bunch of other smaller companies that make ARM chips. It's an even playing field. So that means it's open. But then if you master that thing, it gives you the right to charge more for it and to make better stuff than your competition. So is Google going to share, like if they come out with the G1 chip, I doubt it. Yeah. I feel like they're not.
They had the OP1 thing that they were partnering with. Well, it was technically I think that was their toe sticking in the water, going,
maybe we'll just help use somebody else's chip. It was the Rock chip $33.99. And if they went that route, fine. Like, great. They should have partnered with MediaTek, but partner with MediaTek and
or
say,
just
hey,
buy them.
Yeah, like we want custom chips built. And they clearly didn't do that. You know, they were using an off the shelf chip and trying to make some modifications to what they could and make it work in a Chromebook. That's honestly what's happened with MediaTek chips too, up to this point. Now we have MediaTek saying, hey, we're building Chromebook chips. That is the type of thing, like, I think that Google making their own silicon could help promote. So if Google comes out and says, hey, our new Pixelbook contains our Google silicon or whatever, I don't know what they're going to call them, you know, our Pixel phones and our Pixel books and all of our smart home stuff all have our own processors in them, and here's why that's awesome. And it takes G1. Advantage of this, and it takes advantage of
that's
that.
That's what I was
the G1.
The G1.
G1.
The Twitter user. I love it.
Yeah,
and you know, yeah. And they can.
To me, it makes sense. I think this is all coming on the heels of. I mean, the OP1 whole thing, that all kind of fell flat on its face because the herald for the OP1 was the Rock chip. And honestly, it turned out to be a dud. But Google wants silicon makers to make chips designed for Chrome OS.
Right.
And we've seen it now with Ryzen. They have these Ryzen chips coming out that they're honestly just tweaked versions of the Ryzen chips that AMD already has, but they have the C on them and they're tweaked for Chrome OS, and Google is in a prime place to launch their own silicon, and that should help catapult this movement forward.
Yeah, because I don't know that we could say Qualcomm's taking it completely serious. Like the 7C is used on Windows too. Like I don't.
They're not all in on.
Yeah, I think they're like, hey,
Chromebooks.
You know, we'll make it work. We'll make it work on a Chromebook, and we'll take advantage. But again, ARM being wide open is both things. It's a commodity, but it's also can be weaponized.
Right.
And I think if Google will do that, if they'll weaponize it, if they'll use it and be like, hey, look, we're going to make this.
We're going to make it awesome.
Buying a Pixelbook and using our ARM chip has all these benefits, then the MediaTek's of the world and the Snapdragon or the Qualcomm's of the world then look and go, oh, wow, that does work really well. Look how good this is. This is a great system. We want to get in on that kind of level. Yeah. And they have the freedom to. They really do. Like Qualcomm or MediaTek, either one, have the ability to talk directly. And they're already doing this, to talk directly with manufacturers and say, hey, what is it you want to build? Chrome, we know the asset of Chrome OS. What is it you want to bring to the table, and how can we make this chip work in tandem with all those things to deliver the product you would like to bring to market? Where Google has the benefit is they're just more vertically aligned. They have a team in house that says, hey, we're building this. What hardware are you thinking? They say, we're thinking this hardware, and they know Chrome OS obviously better than anyone else. And so they have a little bit of a step up, but it's still a pretty level playing ground. And the reason why I don't think if Google or when Google comes out with their own silicon, it's not going to be like, hey, all Chromebooks are powered by the G1 processor. Are they even going to share it? I don't think so. Yeah. I just don't think so.
I don't think they will.
But I could be wrong.
I think we'll know more. I think we'll know more. I would say. Maybe even early next year, we'll start seeing some stuff
before,
on this.
Before Q2 or by Q2,
we'll know more
about Google's
silicon. At least some rumors or something of what they're doing. Yeah, like right now, we don't really know much.
Guarantee the first thing we'll see, because there's some rumors swirling now. I don't know if you all have seen these, but that the Pixel 6, which is a terrible name for a phone, Pixel
6. March release.
Yeah, like a February March release, and that it's going to contain that silicon.
Yeah. So, early.
If that happens,
if that phone leaks the same way any other Google phone has leaked, we'll know maybe by Christmas.
We'll know next week.
We'll know by Christmas.
Yeah, but in the event that it does, even if they've been pretty clear that a Pixel phone first, Chromebook after.
Yeah.
Being able to see what a Pixel phone would do with Google's own silicon and be able to test it and benchmark and see all these things and look at that, we'll be able to make some assumptions about what they'll pull off with the Chromebook.
What if they just went all in March? They're getting away, maybe they're getting away from the fall release schedule. They're getting away from all these other people putting out all their tech in October and September, right?
But especially if they get off the Qualcomm boat, they don't have to worry about that.
They don't have
anymore.
To worry, because that's what's dictated some of this,
100%.
Qualcomm's putting out their stuff on a certain schedule, so then all these manufacturers are putting out their same stuff kind of in this same routine.
Samsung pushes hard to be able to get their stuff always out. One of the first people in March to get their phone out with the latest Snapdragon. It's like, that's about as quick as you can get, and that's Samsung.
Yeah, exactly. The biggest of the biggest. So what if Google just goes all in? What if they put out a Pixel 6 with this new chip, Google chip in it, and then they're like, oh, and also we've updated the Pixelbook. Here's Pixelbook 2 or what, or just Pixelbook 2021 version.
Yeah. And just give us the same Pixelbook.
It's the
basically.
Same. It's the same
cut
design.
Cut the bezels down. Get rid of the silicon.
Get rid of the silicon.
Or silicone handrest. Yeah.
Silicone pads.
And put in Google silicon inside.
Yep. Done.
finished.
USI screen and you're good to go.
Yeah, yeah.
Boom. Add USI screen. Yeah. Yeah,
need that.
There we go. There's
how about fruition. A stowable, rechargeable USI stylus? If we're asking Boom. For stuff, if we're asking
stowable. For yes, love it.
I haven't written this yet. Here's a tidbit. This maybe go out over the weekend, but there's a stowable USI stylus toting Chromebook coming that is of a Jasper Lake variety, which means
oh wow,
very affordable. Jasper Lake's going to yeah. replace the N4000s, the Gemini like stuff. So it's going to be in the low, you know, $300 type Chromebook arena, and it's going to have a stowable, rechargeable USI stylus. So this isn't something that's going to be, oh, only the premium Chromebooks have it. Nope, this is yeah. going to become commodity. Like yeah. a stowable, rechargeable stylus in a Chromebook is just going to be like, uh-huh, yeah, and a and keyboard, right?
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
Normalized. Exactly. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, let's take a real quick break for an ad and we'll be right back. This podcast is brought to you by NordVPN. We recommend the service and we use NordVPN because they keep your browsing secure and private on any device. Whether you're using a Chromebook, an Android device, a Mac, an iPhone, or a Windows device, NordVPN is going to protect your browsing. They also have 24/7 customer support in case you ever have any issues, and they offer a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to learn more and maybe give it a try, head over to chromeunboxed.com/Nord, N-O-R-D. Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. So as we were saying during our break there, this is like the at least 4 weeks that ARM has like dominated the Chromecast.
Yeah, ARM is just, I don't
Man,
know.
There's that, some cool stuff happening.
There's a guy that used to comment in our on our stories all the time. Like, I haven't seen him around in forever. He had his own.
I've seen him comment one time in like 6 months, but.
Does his YouTube channel still, is it a thing still?
I don't know. Let me check.
What are yeah. you talking about? I don't even know what you're
What's
talking about.
What's his name? What was his username?
Charbax.
Charbax. You remember Charbax?
Oh, yeah.
Early
okay.
on.
Okay, yeah, I remember Charbax.
Charbax loved trumpeting ARM stuff, technology in general, and basically demonizing Intel.
Mm-hmm. He just published a video.
Okay, so he's still out there. Maybe he got tired of us. Because he would put some pretty hateful stuff on there about Intel and yeah. about us for talking about Intel. But I mean, like, at the time, it was like, dude, you know, there's like three ARM-based Chromebooks, and they're kind of sucky.
We
you know,
need good Chromebooks, right? And now,
at the
that
time,
means Intel.
Yeah, the only way that was happening was through Intel chips, and it's still technically the truth right now. Like, you want a high-performance Chromebook, you're going to get an Intel Chromebook right now. And Google and Intel have obviously, you know, been very close through this whole process, and so. The next gen, like, I don't want to paint any of this stuff and say, oh, ARM is the future, ARM's going to change everything, Intel can go away, and we'll never have an Intel Chromebook. Like, that's not the future I'm painting. Like, you want a fast Chromebook, especially one that's going to run Linux applications and, you know, parallels and stuff. Like, 100%, you need an Intel-based Chromebook for right now still. Probably all the way through 2021 until all of these other ARM Chromebooks show up. Then the conversation will change at some point. Like, if you're just looking for a good performing Chromebook that gets great battery life, maybe has some better connectivity options because LTE and stuff obviously becomes easier with ARM Chromebooks, then yeah, the conversation changes in that $400 to $600 range. You know, there are going to be some things that ARM devices can offer that Intel chips won't be able to match at that price point. That's just the way it's going to be eventually. It's just we're not there yet.
Well,
and I could see, like, enterprise, like Intel Chromebooks are enterprise Chromebooks. Like, that's what it is, because they need Linux applications and they need parallels and all that kind of stuff, and that's them. And a lot of consumers buy ARM based Chromebooks. I could literally see that being the case in like 2022,
right?
But we're not there yet, and so yeah. we don't want to come across that way. Like, ARM's the future, ARM is everything. But ARM brings a lot of great stuff to the table, just for the industry as a whole.
Right.
It
and,
really
and let's
does.
Be honest, if Apple can make 90% of their claims come true with their new ARM processor.
Yeah. Yep.
The thought of having to have a core I whatever, all this stuff to do heavy duty processing and video editing and all that stuff, ARM can do it. ARM can do it. They're capable of it. Even before the M1. There you go. Yeah.
I don't even know what that was. What
Roxanne,
was that?
Roxanne, man.
Oh, Roxanne.
But okay. It was also a vague Friends reference, because when Ross.
You guys are always making Friends references, and
Ross,
I don't get
Ross's
any of them.
Son, this is like season 8 or 9, Ross's son was going to school with Sting's son, and they didn't get along, and so there's this whole thing. Well, Phoebe wanted Sting tickets, and so she was like, can you talk to him? And he's like, I don't know if I can. I don't really know him, and our kids don't get along and all this stuff. And so he's in the middle of explaining this, and Phoebe just goes, Ross can.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go. Arm can. Anyway, arm can. Sorry.
Moving on. The as Gabe was saying.
I don't even know what Gabe was saying. After he said arm can twice.
I literally don't know what Gabe was saying.
Processing.
I was trying to transition.
Yeah, with the proper structure, we'll be able to. And again, like Robbie said, it's not going to replace Intel, but ARM can become just as competitive in this space because as they evolve and as they prove themselves in, Apple's new devices and Windows devices, whatever, Chrome OS will get to the point where things like GPU leveraging and whatnot will be capable of doing that. Yeah. And then we'll hopefully start seeing those newer, more powerful GPU, ARM GPUs and Chrome OS as well.
So Gabe, talk a little bit about those. There was a couple articles that you referenced as we were getting started, a couple of them you sent last night about some of the comparisons between what people are already saying about, and obviously people need to get these devices in. We need to run full tests. These things were announced this week. But there's already some people that are speculating.
Same day as the MediaTek, by the way.
Yes. There are people speculating. So, and you sent some articles. I can't remember the exact specs, so you're going to be better at this, I think, than me. But
I don't know about all that. But so, yeah, I saw is it Anantech? I can never say it.
Anantech.
They haven't benchmarked them, but they said that Apple's claims of, the 10-watt TDP, but more power than whatever Core I, whatever, are very, very plausible. And it really is because they have their own GPU that they've built in this custom ARM architecture, and it very well could do that. But then ZDNet said Apple M1 speed test actually blows away the newest Intel MacBook Pro.
Yeah. Were they saying the latest MacBook Pro?
Let's see.
Or like the 16 MacBook Pro like we have.
No.
It was the latest. I thought.
Here, let's read. It says the single core performance beats all Macs on the market, and the multi-core score tops the 2019 16-inch Pro model, including the MacBook Pro with the 10th gen Core i9.
Wow.
That's a lot. That's a lot of processing power. So
it is, especially considering that they're saying 18 to 20 hours of use, not battery life use,
like actually using
web
the
browsing,
thing.
Constant video running. Again, being fair to Apple, like when they've made claims on battery, they've usually been pretty accurate.
Yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's what they were saying. That's what we were saying a little bit before we got started here. Like, Apple normally doesn't just go out on a whim and throw stuff out there. They normally tested it pretty well. Now, the first couple iterations of it might kind of go quick. They might kind of get this into the market, figure out a couple things, tweak it, and then put out some new versions pretty quickly.
They're already building them too, for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But when they launch something, they put out some of these specs, like they've done their research.
That's what a lot of the comments on the Anantech article said, that it, historically, when Apple says, hey, it will do this, they usually underpromise and overdeliver. So you can expect probably better. But the ZDNet article does go on to say that the maxed out, no pun intended, MacBook Pro with a discrete GPU probably does perform better from a GPU standpoint, but raw processing power, the new ARM chip destroys the i9.
So I was reading a Mac Rumors article where they were comparing just the Mac Mini. So the Mac Mini 2020, which was just put out, the space gray one.
Which was a random move from them.
Knowing
that they were going to do this with the M1.
Totally random. Like, why did you put that device out? It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe they just wanted the Intel option for people, like an updated Intel option.
True.
So there's people that are going to still want to go get that, maybe? Oh, he has an idea.
I have an idea.
Okay, but they were comparing the two. So they were comparing the two, and they were saying, like, yeah, like, for overall, like, big workflows, like, big performance workflows, there are instances when you need the more RAM and the higher, maybe, well, not even processing power. What were they saying? I can't remember how they phrased it, but you might need the Intel for that sort of stuff. But they were like, for most users, this M1 is going to do the everything that they need to do, especially like we've been talking a lot about buying this thing for video editing, because we've already been discussing buying a trash can, the Mac Pro.
Nope, a trash can. That's just all I was on board for.
But it's 30. What is it going to cost us?
Three grand.
$3,000, basically.
Yeah, for a used or refurbished
2015,
yeah, or something model? Like that. Yeah, it's not the tall one that looks like a cheese.
It's Skylight. Was it Skylight? No, that was this device. This was Skylight.
Yeah, our current Mac that we edit on is the first gen Skylight.
Garbage. Which,
if you know anything about Intel, first gen Skylight, no bueno. So, it's been working. It's been okay.
But we were talking, and we were like, you know, this Mac that we have right here in front of us that we podcast with, its primary purpose, the two main things we do with it are two Apple products. We use GarageBand to do audio because it sounds amazing. It sounds better than anything we've been able to use otherwise.
It's user-friendly. It's built in. It's there.
It works.
It like, works great.
Soundtrap is great for people that need like kind of an on-the-go thing. If you want to do a quick podcast, by all means, Soundtrap's great. We've tried Audacity. We've tried some other things. There's maybe some other Chromebook options that we could use, but we have this Mac already, and GarageBand sounds amazing, and it works. So we use it for that, and we use it for Final Cut.
Yep.
And like a lot of times I'll have this docked here at the office because it's just easy, because I like to be able to jump around if I'm working on a photo edit or if I'm working on a video edit. Like I like to jump around and be able to have that. I don't want to have the Chromebook open and have to switch back and forth. So normally the Chromebook's like my morning or kind of house setup, office setup at the house. And then, you know, at here at our main office, I'm using the Mac. And it seems like Apple is going to wire this thing and configure this thing, the new M1 I'm talking about, for those apps specifically. And there is a video that Jonathan Morrison put out as kind of a rebuttal to Linus Tech Tips, which I thought was really funny. Like those guys have always kind of gone back and forth, and it's a fun kind of YouTube thing. Like they're friendly, but they kind of also call each other out sometimes, which I think I think is good. From a creator standpoint, I think that's always good to do. And he started a render on his iMac.
Core i9.
What did he say? 64, 32 gigs RAM.
And I'm not sure now that it's Core i9. I can't remember what he said.
Whatever. So he put it on Twitter. He said it was a beefed out.
It was a beefed out like, iMac.
Nice iMac.
He said it's not top of the line, but it was very powerful.
Exact same file. Exact same codec, exact same everything, exact same export. So exporting under the same
H.265
MP4. Is it still MP4?
Yeah, it's an MP4. Yeah.
So exact same export as that. He started it as that's rendering, or exporting, I'm sorry, not rendering. As that is rendering on the iMac, he pulls out the iPhone 12.
Mini.
And is clicking
like
around.
20% battery left.
Oh, yeah. He got the notification. He said, I'm on low battery, too. So he clicks out of that exact same file in the iMovie.
He uses iMovie on the phone. Yeah. That was the only unfortunate thing. I wish he would have used iMovie on the... He could have used iMovie Mac, right?
Yeah.
Don't you still have iMovie on Mac or no?
Yeah. I think you can still use it.
Anyway.
I don't know. Whatever. But the rendering should, in theory, be the same.
I mean, you would think the desktop would have an advantage.
Oh yeah, actually. Sure, because it's using the pro version of the software.
Right.
Well, he starts. He's like he's messing around with stuff, and he clicks the wrong thing. And he has to go back. So in the meantime, the iMac is still exporting,
still chugging.
So finally, he finally gets it, clicks it, and he holds it up, and it finishes still faster than the iMac did.
On a phone.
Exact. And then he showed the exported file size, exactly the same.
Same file. It's the same thing.
Exact same file. And it literally was, I mean, we were talking a second ago about what percentage higher. It was at least 200% faster.
Yeah, it was a lot faster. And then he goes on to kind of explain some of this stuff and why he's just saying, like, you know, Jonathan Morrison's a clearly an Apple fan, and that's fine. You know, I do wish he was a little more forthright with it. He's just like, oh, I just like to make stuff. But you love Apple stuff, and it's fine to like Apple stuff. Like, as a person who makes videos and helps record music and stuff, like, yeah, Apple's products are what you need to be using anyway. Right. Like, if you're talking about media creation, Apple 10 years ago decided they were going to be really good at that and have been the best at that. They focus on that. They're very good at making that work. The benefit with the M1 is that this isn't some brand new chip that they thought of, like, you know, 2 weeks ago. They've been thinking about this for a while. I think probably with what they've figured out with, probably starting with like the A13 that they put in the first iPad Pro, and then continuing with the A14, like that, those types of progressions they've made from processing power, they put that in place and then added, you know, whatever they needed to do from GPU and yada yada, yada, and adding the RAM into that whole die to put it in the M1 chip. They've been thinking about this whole thing. So that means their own in-house software has been being built to be optimized for this stuff. Make no mistake, Apple software, like Apple-made software, is going to run like a mother on the M1 because they need it to. Like, and I guarantee they weren't ready to make this announcement until they at least had that stuff in place. So Safari, Final Cut, what's some of their other stuff? I'm clearly way deep into the Apple ecosystem here.
I don't know.
Maybe their office stuff.
This Mac has all Google stuff on it, so right. I don't know.
But
their mail, they have a mail client.
Do they have a photo editor of any sort?
Photos.
Oh, it's
I
just
use
called
photos on here every now and then. Yeah.
Okay. The stuff that is built for Mac is going to work well on Mac. When Photoshop comes out completely compiled for the M1, because they have Rosetta, I think is what they're calling it. So the Rosetta Stone has something to do with some like language thing. What is the Rosetta Stone? Do you know that, Gabe? That reference? It's the reason why the company Rosetta Stone is called that.
It's the broken tablets that they unearthed that they believe is the root of all
language.
Modern languages. Yeah.
So that
the singular
right. So
point.
They use that term because it's Rosetta for Mac is going to be the thing that basically says, hey, you have an Intel x86 based program. Here's how it's an emulator. Here's how we'll emulate it to work on the M1. And their claims are pretty bold there. I think that's going to be the places where the M1 chip is going to fall down a little bit. And that's why they were being vague on some other things, because people are going to be confused. Like, well, you know, it's not running Adobe Premiere as fast as my Core i7, whatever is running. Like, no, probably not, because it's going to have to emulate it. But in the next couple months, when all of Adobe stuff is already written, like I saw a tweet come up today that DaVinci Resolve beta has already got a core or an Apple M1 version already coming out. Yeah. So I'm like, trust me, like if Apple knows anything, they know how to wrench developers and make people do what they want them to do. And what Apple wants them to do is build a version of their software, and they've even given them the tools. Like, here's the tools to
like the universal
recompile
thing, or
yeah.
Whatever
so you
they
could you
it.
Can write apps that in this with these tools that work on both Intel and ARM. You know, so they've already provided that tool. They've provided conversion tools, and they have Rosetta that until you get it fixed, it'll still run on this thing. So like, they've created these stopgaps. I think some of the apps that aren't made for the M1 chip, probably, I guarantee you're going to see some struggle.
Might have some issues.
I would bet. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see how that all works out. They've obviously made some pretty bold claims as how good their emulator is going to be. But if what we've seen on Windows is any indication, some of these bigger programs trying to be emulated in any way, like, they're just going to struggle.
Yeah.
They're not going to do as well as what they would do natively written. But again, that's what Apple does. Like, here's a bridge. In 6 months, all your big applications will already be written for the M1 chip.
Because
they're like, hey, look, if we want to stay relevant on Macs where all of our user base is, if you're a, you know, if you're Adobe, you have been on this. Yeah, this isn't like a, we don't want to. You have to fix this. Apple made this move. You have no control over that. And they've given you the tools to fix it. Like, they're going to make their stuff work on Mac OS. 100%. There's no question.
Yeah.
The question then becomes for the lingering pieces of software that are out there that aren't creatives, that aren't creative types. So if a software maker is looking at it going, Mac makes up like 15% of our user base, are they really going to take the time to make their app work by, you know, Q1, Q2, 2021? Probably not. So there's going to be a lot of users out there that pick up these devices and start installing all the programs that they've been using, and probably be in for a hard reality
it might not work.
It's going to feel like, oh, I went from a dope MacBook Pro to a MacBook Air is what it's going to probably feel like. But there's plenty of users to try and test all of that stuff out. For us, what we're looking at
like
doing,
us, we might just try it.
Well, and for us though, the things that we use our Mac for are Apple-based pieces of software mm-hmm. that we know are going to work out of the mm-hmm. gate. And so we can take all the benefits of this M1 architecture. You know, we can take the fact that I bet this little Mac Mini is going to run off. I bet you we'll be able to run it off like a battery pack, you know, like that you would charge your phone with, because it's the same architecture that runs a tablet. So it doesn't need a big, you know, 65 watt charger. It doesn't have to have that.
The cord is like it's its own like,
is its own little charger
thing. Well, not proprietary. It just looks like an old like
barrel charger.
Yeah, cover. But it's like the little two-sided thing, you know, where it plugs in.
Oh, in the Mac.
Oh yeah, it looks like a printer. Mac. Printer.
Yes, that's a good example. Yes,
or a printer charger. Like a
yes, a crockpot charger,
like a USB A kind of thing.
No,
or
no,
USB-B?
No. It's like a barrel charger, but two of them
it's
right next to.
Yeah.
Two okay. Prong. So
yeah.
Imagine half of a Chromebook.
Yeah,
cable.
Barrel.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So then you'd have to have some sort of converter to.
You'd have to AC have an. Converter. You'd have to have an AC plug adapter to make that happen.
I was hoping there that they would be a little progressive here and just say, "Hey, we're going to power this thing over a USB-C port."
No,
that's ridiculous.
No, too much,
too soon.
But you know, like to be able to get, you know, it starts at $700 to be able to get something that's going to run Final Cut the way this thing is probably going to run Final Cut.
Yeah.
For us, this makes a ton of sense because now this allows us to get a very portable, very inexpensive comparatively thing that's going to edit video and do the things we need from a Mac at this point. And that's all we really need from it. Like we're not looking for this to be, you know, the main computer. We would rather use
$1,400.
Yeah, we'd rather
compared
use
$3,000.
You know, Chromebooks for most stuff, and so it's going to be an interesting thing. And the reason this is super interesting to us especially is we're having all these conversations around how ARM is changing and coming along
for
Chromebooks.
What can ARM really do?
Yeah, what's ARM capable of? We're about to find out in a very real, tangible way the max capacity of what ARM is capable of when everything lines up. Now, that when you're talking about Final Cut on a Mac running Apple Silicon,
like you said, it's optimized.
That's everything is optimized and perfectly in line as you can get. So this is best case scenario. This is what ARM is, the full capability of it. And my guess is, from the looks of it, it's going to be insanely compelling. And does that mean we're going to see, you know, ARM chips and Chromebooks that do this tomorrow? No, it doesn't. But what could the future hold?
Yeah.
You know?
What we're going to do is we're going to, if we get it, which we're going to, get it. Let's be honest with ourselves. We're going to copy over a project file, you know, all the assets and everything. We're going to put it on this Mac.
Yep, and on the other one.
And on that one,
gonna we're going to
click export at the exact same time. See what happens. And I have a very strong feeling that the M1 is going to demolish this thing. The other day I was exporting your thoughts on the MediaTek event. It was a 3-4 minute video, mm-hmm. not long at all. And what did we say? It took about an hour to export that video.
Yeah, and then the rendering was.
And oh, by the time the rendering took about that same amount of time.
Yeah,
so
I would say it was about 2 hours.
Yeah, 2 hours total of, hey, I have my edit done. The edit is done. Like, I have all my stuff in place. Now I need to sit here, let the color grade run, let all the graphics render out. Got to do all that, you know, and then now I can export. I can actually get the project out after I've already waited an hour, basically. And I have a very good feeling that this ARM chip, again, we got to remember, this is an ARM chip, is going to crush it. And for the price, it's a no-brainer for us. I mean, it's $1,400 compared to $3,200 or whatever it's going to be. So to get the trash can. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to compare them. It's going to be fun to see what an ARM chip can really do. And like you said, this is best case scenario, right? So this maybe isn't an apples to apples comparison of what maybe some newer ARM chips that are coming out are going to be able to do. Like, oh, hey, like a Chromebook's going to be able to render video like this. Like, nah, maybe not. But
it just
it's going to be a fun experiment.
It proves that ARM is like ready for big time to me. That's what
with
it's doing.
All the things in place that it needs,
right.
It can do this. It's right. capable of this stuff.
And for a long time, you know, ARM on desktop specifically has kind of played a sideshow. So it's always, we're going to add this in and we're going to see if we can make this work versus Apple is putting it on stage, limelight, saying, hey, we're putting all our eggs in this basket.
Right.
What's it actually capable of? Because with Intel, like if Intel chips had been treated the way ARM chips were up until now, would we even have that expectation of their computational power if nobody even wrote stuff, even like if people were writing software that didn't work on Intel chips, would we even have a conceptual notion that they're fast? Like, we don't even know. We don't know what they're capable of until all the stuff aligns and somebody takes a step and goes, because even Microsoft hasn't been able to do that. They can't. They're not in the position to do what Apple's doing. You know, they've got Windows that works on ARM, but good luck convincing all of those legacy people to write software for
a very
tiny niche.
Not right. gonna happen, bro.
It's and so we'll emulate everything, and so then reviewers get it and go, yeah, god, everything runs slow on this. Well, there's nothing written for ARM on it, and you're like,
it's all emulated. Yeah.
And so Apple is just in it's a unique garbage. Position to do what they're doing, but so is Google with Chrome OS. I mean, Chrome OS is basically the web, so web's fine. Web's
it's
fine
gonna work
ARM,
just fine,
you know. So you know, if Apple has great success here, I feel like we're looking at that trickling down into great success for ARM on.
Yeah,
on
and I'm sure, Robbie, I'm sure you've probably thought about writing this, but this is on my to-do list too of why Apple's M1 chip matters for Chrome OS, for the industry in general, but for Chrome OS, because this could completely change the landscape of computing, not just Chromebooks. But with where Chrome OS is with ARM right now, and with the way they're moving forward with leveraging hardware and the web being the way that it is, if ARM is truly successful with this processor, Chromebooks, I mean, the parity between Chrome OS and Mac OS and Windows is, it's just drawing so much closer.
Yeah, I mean, and think about the benefit for Chromebooks. Like, it means the whole like Android project that's been ongoing for almost four and a half years now is going to just be better because of it. Like,
is that out of beta yet?
Yeah. I mean, without doing anything,
yeah.
You know, just more ARM chips means Android developers breathe a little easier, or more compelled even to make more apps that have a desktop interface. And you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I even had the notion today as we were talking, like, we've been waiting for Adobe Premiere to roll out for
forever.
Oh,
yeah. Was that your thought earlier?
No, I have that thought too. Okay. Still. So, you know, we've been waiting for Adobe Premiere to Premiere Rush to show up, and it just hasn't shown up. We were talking earlier today, and I'm like, I wonder if it's not Adobe waiting for ARM Chromebooks to show up. Man, that's not a good sign on Adobe's part. It's not like, oh, right, that's the right move. Like, compile your software to work on x86. That's what you need to do. But if they don't feel like doing that and they don't see Chrome OS as a viable thing to spend the development time on, perhaps they're just waiting for the handful of the next-gen MediaTek devices. Because honestly, let's be real, are you really going to try to edit big videos with Premiere Rush on the Lenovo Chromebook Duet?
Nope.
I will answer for you, no, you're not. Yeah, you would not want to do this. But if they're sitting back and going, hey, we do have new MediaTek 8192 devices coming out probably in the first half of 2021, and we'll have some Snapdragon Chromebooks coming out, our software already works on those things. Like, people have Android phones, and it's running on those platforms already. No big deal. I could see Premiere Rush probably waiting and coming out alongside these ARM-powered Chromebooks. And that's just one example of how these developers are looking at this whole thing. They have finite resources. They're making decisions based on, you know, what they can and can't do, what they're going to spend time on, what they're not going to. And, you know, the benefit for Apple coming out and doing what they're doing is shining a light on what ARM can do. which is just going to cause developers to be thinking like, oh, well, I don't write anything for Apple, but I write stuff for Android. And now the idea of mobile apps or mobile platform apps being on desktops becomes more mainstream because Google's been doing it for a while, but most people just don't think about it that way. Then now I'm thinking like, oh my God, is my app going to be on a Chromebook? Because again, we talked to John at Google, and he said that most developers don't even realize their apps are on Chromebooks. So like you can see where what Gabe was saying just a minute ago, where this whole thing could trickle down and cause developers to be like, oh crap, I didn't even think about it. But yeah, I guess it will run on a Chromebook. And well, we may not have the time to make sure that it works really great on x86. We know it works on ARM, so we're already good to go there. Let's change up so when screen size is this big, we add a sidebar over here and make a nice desktop. You know, like I think it's going to have a benefit, a beneficial impact on Chromebooks moving forward. But back to my quick thought, and this is I think I'm done talking after this. Earlier on when he said
we've heard that line before, haven't we, Gabe?
we were talking about why it is that Apple put out
famous last words.
I'm not going to let you derail me. The Intel Mac Mini just a couple months ago. Why'd they do this? Could be very brilliant if they did it. So it basically gives tech bloggers and anyone who wants to see a comparison a very specific side-by-side this versus that. It's not like, well, that's on a MacBook and this is on a Mini. And you're like, yeah. Nope, this is apples to apples right here. Like, no
latest
pun,
version,
no pun intended.
2020.
This is the best Intel we got. Here's our new M1. Here you go. Check them out. Plug them into a monitor and see what happens.
Bro.
Because it's the exact same
Let's
thing.
Let's just buy both of them. I'm just kidding.
But
no.
We're not an Apple blog.
Just wait. The YouTube tech scene will be inundated.
That Mac Rumors article was it was exactly that.
Yeah,
that was it.
I mean, that's what they're gonna and we're gonna see like the beasted out. How much? And what's the cheese grater Mac go for? Like $40,000
gosh.
If you max it out, yeah. Something like 30, that.
If you get the wheels,
put the $700 wheels on.
Put like, the wheels on it.
Somebody Lou, if somebody reach out. Somebody knows Lou at Unbox Therapy. He'll do this. He got the money. Go get that thing. Maxed out, and then max out the Mac Mini. Put them side by side. Do some tests. See what happens. Because I would venture to say, even with a $40,000 Intel machine, there are going to be certain things. I would hope that the Intel machine would win in most categories. You would hope.
But yeah.
With some of the claims Apple's making, it's like there might be certain tasks that this
like,
chip is
going
to be better at.
I'm thinking of like a Hollywood movie studio who's running a color grading room, right? There's these crazy rooms where these people are pulling in all this different footage and they have all these screens and all this and they're looking at the raw footage there and then they're adjusting it here and the output's there and they have all this stuff. Like, I'm thinking of that scenario. Like, what happens in that scenario? You're going from this, why did they, like, they're, from Apple's standpoint, they made that Mac Pro, the cheese grater, for a reason. Like, it's got to be good, right? So, like, where does the M1 fit into? I think the M1 fits in perfectly for people like us, like YouTubers.
Right.
For people who are working on one project at a time that's pretty simple. Like, we don't have a ton of stuff going on in our videos.
There has to be some I.O. stuff going on. That there has to be some limitations to what there's. Because if not, why would they? They would have just stopped making Macs and Mac Pros for the last year.
Why would they have invested all of that time?
Right, we're gonna put the M1 in everything. Like, there's got to be limitations.
It can't be that powerful because you have companies like Acer and their concept line. You got like Lucasfilms and stuff using these $40,000 and $50,000 to $60,000 desktop machines with the Intel and the GTX and all this stuff. That there has to be a line where those devices are needed and the M1 just can't. You can't tell me that it can do even remotely close to everything that those devices
can. It doesn't seem possible, but it's going
to
be interesting to watch people try.
But
like, that's going to be fun.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I think for most people, I mean, we honestly weren't ever going to buy a Mac Pro, like the cheese grater. Like, we're never going to buy that. Like, Marquez got one, I think, because he just...
But he
probably
also has
the money.
$100,000 red cameras.
Yeah, he just wanted to have it probably more than anything. But it's going to fit in really nicely. Like, this Mac Mini is going to fit in really nicely for YouTubers, for casual creators, for photographers. Once Adobe rolls out their stuff, like, this thing's going to fit in really well for that. And there's so many people right now that are making that sort of content. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you think about how many people in the world truly need a Mac Pro, the cheese grater, a tiny, tiny amount of people. Not many people need that machine.
Right.
Like, hardly any, honestly. And now, I mean, even the Mac Pro, the new Mac Pro with M1 in it, like, it's going to do a lot of things well for a lot of people.
Yeah, my only concern with what they've done with pricing, like, they took the Mac Mini down in pricing.
The MacBook Pro is so weird.
$1,300. Why is it still so expensive? Like, you're building your own silicon, so the whole Intel tax is gone. Because the
chassis is made from 100% recycled.
It's the same thing. Like, it's the same device. You just saved a chunk of money by putting your own processor in and not having to figure out a discrete graphics card and, you know, blah, 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 all the things that building your own silicon should help with price. Why does it cost the same? Like, why didn't you pass at least $100, $150 off in savings to the customers to show, hey, not only is it just as powerful, but now we can make it for cheaper? Like, that would have been a killer thing. Imagine if that MacBook Air would have come in at $700.
Make the Mac Pro $999.
Yeah, to start, it should be.
The base model, $999. Dude, that would have crushed it. I was watching the keynote. You had left, Gabe was doing something. I was sitting there just watching it by myself, and they were talking about the Mac Pro, and I was like, oh my gosh, here we go. Like, please make this thing $999, because I specifically remember whenever I went to college, I was like the first one out of my friend group that had a Mac, because I was all... Back then, like, I've just always been techie, right? And I've always been... Like,
I can only be creative if I have a Mac.
I have to have this Mac to be forward-thinking and unique. I was always into video editing, and I wanted a Mac. So, because, like you said earlier, they're way ahead on that stuff, honestly. Yeah, so I got the Mac, and then my buddy Travis wanted to get a Mac as well for college. We were going to the same school, and we drove all the way up to, what was the name of that place? Mac Authority in Cincinnati, Ohio, to buy him a Mac. Because it was on sale. It was the unibody, the white unibody Mac.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And it was $949 was the price of that device. And we thought we were getting a deal. Like, and it was a great deal because we had done all kinds of research. I'd helped him find this device. You know, it was like before you had all the refurb stuff that they do now. Right. Like, we found this device. We drove up there and got it. And that was a great price for that device. And I think about the devices they're putting out now are miles ahead of that. And if they put that M1 out with that sort of price, I was like, please, just make it like $999, even like $11, just make it $1099. $1099 would be great too. But it was,
I think that's starting the only place.
What was it? It starts at $1299, right? Is that first 13, one?
Yeah. And so that's what they've always started at.
Yeah.
So that part was like, come on. Part of this is, you know, ARM costs less and yada yada, and it's in-house too. It's an in-house processor. Come on.
Well, and that's where, like, Linus's video was kind of funny. It's like,
yeah.
Do you want an iPad with a screen?
An iPad with a touch screen or an iPad with no screen? And to be fair, it's kind of what it is. Let's be honest. Yeah, I mean,
probably
it's
probably not far off.
From the internals, that's what it is. But people have been talking about the power of the iPad Pros for a little bit now, trying to say, like, these things are crazy powerful, and people write it off because it's like, it's a different form factor, it's a different OS, so it's not the same.
It didn't have a desktop class layout. Or it didn't have a desktop layout. That's all it is.
And that's the other part, like, seeing how Mac OS behaves when, like, sometimes I'll come over and Joe's desktop is cluttered with 20 open windows at a time. Like, how are these ARM chips going to process that kind of load? Because ARM chips, we don't see them in this scenario very often. So there's a ton that's unknown here. And the fact that Apple was not super specific with any of their claims leads me to believe there are going to be some places where these things don't perform the way that you would want them. For what we're doing.
Yeah, stay tuned. We're going to test it.
Yeah, for what we're going to do, I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun experiment for sure.
Yeah.
It's going to be a fun experiment. I mean, this thing, the Mac Pro that we're looking at here is always on a, what do you call these things?
Just a laptop stand.
Laptop stand. It's always on a laptop stand.
Riser.
A laptop riser. And I have the keyboard trackpad, and I have the Acer monitor that I bought a while ago. So plugging in this Mac Mini is going to be plug it right in, ready to go.
Plug and go.
It's going to be, I'm going to lose a little bit of real estate over there, but honestly, the monitor that I have in there was $250. So guess what? I can just buy another one of those.
Either that or Hughes, we've got three 1080p extra monitors sitting
over here. Yeah, the externals. Yeah. So, it's going to be a really fun experiment, mainly because we have been talking about ARM for a while on this podcast. We've been talking about it as what's coming for Chrome OS, and now we're obviously the Mac comparison isn't going to line up exactly, but it's at least going to give us an idea of what an ARM processor can really do and what it's capable of. I think that's the interesting part, what it's capable of. So
yeah.
So stay tuned. We're going to keep working on all that stuff. And we're probably going to order one of these pretty soon. Stay tuned.
It'll be ordered today.
Yeah, next week. Come on, give me till next week. I got to take time on these sort of purchases, okay? Oh, you know
if
this.
If we wait till next week, then it's going to take even longer to ship. And...
yeah, you're right. Okay, yeah, we'll order it after this. All right, folks, thanks so much for tuning in. That's it for this week. We appreciate you all listening. We're going to link everything. I didn't take any show notes, so I'm not sure what we talked about, but hopefully we can remember, or we're going to link everything. But thank you all so much for tuning in and for your support, and we'll catch you guys next week. See ya. Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. You can find show notes over at chromeunbox.com/podcast. And if you want to stay up to date with everything that's happening in the world of Chrome and Chrome OS, make sure to check out our website, chromeunbox.com, and follow us on social media by searching for @ChromeUnboxed. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.